Here we go.
I think we should do it virtually. It'll be an invisible float, an invisible, you know, like radio deserves.
And how would that be? Just one person just carrying
Jacob.
Okay, Jacob's just going to be carrying a
with
small
sound effects.
Small transistor radio, just carrying that on his shoulders.
Yeah, we could talk. Yeah, we could talk through the transistor radio. I love that. Hi, everybody. Hello, Edmonds.
Hey, all right.
I did
Clippity
look up
the,
yes,
the,
yes,
the,
yes.
the Edmonds Chamber of Commerce. The deadline to register is next week,
right.
a week from today, the 21st.
Yeah.
And it does look like $35. We'll need at least $35.
All right.
$500 entry fee for any person running for political office. So as long as neither of you are planning a political run, we'll just
I think there's a $100 commercial fee, though. Would we
let's
be considered a commercial
that's,
entity?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Well, let's start a GoFundMe for that.
Yes.
All right. So far, good. Thank you for looking into that. I think we're well on our way. I was the Grand Marshal of 4 Seafair parades in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
1 year, Tom. It was my big year when I was the Grand Marshal of all those little parades. It was fun.
There were protests, though, too, right?
Okay, Tom. I don't know if you know Spanish. Unnecesito, okay? Unnecesito.
No mas. No mas.
Oh, no,
that's
no.
my Spanish.
Yeah, well, there's no necesito on the other stuff. All right. So here's what you got. You got a very interesting situation with Mitch McConnell, who's being asked about whether or not he would nominate, or if it's 2024, and if the Senate if the Republicans get control of the Senate again
in 2022,
will he, and if Biden were to nominate somebody, this is, goes back to the same situation with Merrick Garland, and Mitch McConnell was being asked about it. He was on with Hugh Hewitt, and he said would he nominate a Biden?
Would the rule that you applied in 2016?
Yeah, thanks, Hugh.
So the Scalia vacancy apply in 2024 to any vacancy that occurred then?
Well, I think in the middle of a presidential election, if you have a Senate of the opposite party of the president, you have to go back to the 1880s to find the last time a vacancy was filled. So I think it's highly unlikely. In fact, no, I don't think either party, if it controlled, if it were different from the president, would confirm a Supreme Court nominee in the middle of an election. What was different in 2020 was we were of the same party as the president, and that's why we went ahead with it.
There you go. That's talking about Amy Coney Barrett.
Coney Barrett, yeah.
Yeah, being nominated in 2020. Yeah. So that now the pressure is upon Breyer. Justice Breyer to step down. I think he's 81 or 82 years old, and some Democrats are saying, hey, listen, get out now, leave now. In fact, there's a giant van parked out in front of the Supreme Court with a big picture, and it says, you know, please retire, and it's time for a black female to be on this justice. Have you seen the big van that's out there, Tom? How would you like to have that?
No.
You go into work every day, and there's a big van out front telling you to retire.
Well, so first off, let's talk about how despicable Mitch McConnell is. Okay, I think that's just a given. Now, it's a pure political power play. When he held off on Merrick Garland, he gave this flowery comment about, well, no, we'll let the electorate decide, and so we can't do it. And yet when tide was turned, all that phony, you know, philosophy went out the window. It was a pure power play. Now, you can argue, and I think there are examples of despicable behavior, I'm sure, on the Democrats' part, but
can't
just in terms of what in terms of what he's doing, good. You're not trying, but that's good. The thing is it's a pure power play on his part. It has nothing to do with what's good or right or balanced in this country. Now, the thing about
I don't think he said it was. I think what he said was you got to go all the way back to 1880 something in order to find that case.
But,
Tom, listen.
Yes, you know what?
Everything
that's a false
in politics,
argument.
Everything in politics is power. everything is power.
Yes, yeah.
It's majority and power and strength. Is, yes. And what he's okay. saying is if you reverse the roles, you think the Democrats would do the same? No, it's he's playing by the same thing. He has the power in order to be able to have it in place. So there you go.
Actually, that had happened. But when he's referring to the 1880 situation, the reason that's just a false equivalence is that it's only come up like three times in the last 100 years because it has to have a confluence of all sorts of events, like an unexpected death, like Scalia. Or Ginsburg's. But yes, no. So now, what is the issue with Breyer? One of the biggest problems I have with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her brilliant, historically significant career is that she hung on so long that we now have Amy Coney Barrett as her replacement. At 87, if she had retired in when she was 83 or something, and Obama was still in power, then we could have had another. We, the Democrats or the liberals, would have another justice. So then the question now becomes: if you've got a guy, a cutthroat like McConnell, who is not going to let any Democratic guy person through if he can all help it, which didn't used to be the case, but now things have soured on both sides. I grant you that. Should Breyer at this point retire now so he can allow for a Democratic Congress or Senate barely to approve of a Biden nominee? Because we've just heard from Mitch McConnell that if Mitch McConnell had his say, and he might in the next two elections, then he wouldn't let anybody get in. That might be reason enough for Breyer, given the example of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, how much it cost.
Ginsburg was asked about that, and she said, well, who would you replace me with?
Yes.
So you won't find somebody better than me.
She's right, but it's impractical.
Okay, well,
if we could have her there and say, okay, but if you hold on as long as you can, and you're going to be replaced by Amy Coney Barrett instead, who is anathema to everything that Ruth Bader Ginsburg felt judicially, then she might say, well, yes, given that, I was willing to take the risk, and she almost made it. She, fell a few months short, unfortunately, but if she knew that that was going to be the draw, she might have retired and realized, okay, for the good of what of all the principles I believe in, I will step down because the person that replaces me may not be as good as me, but they're going to live 30 years longer than me, and therefore it would be worth the trade.
Okay. I think it's interesting that you refer to it as a power play when it's all about power. Everything's about power.
AOC used to be.
I don't know when it wasn't, Tom. You tell me historically when the people in power didn't want to keep in power and that politics wasn't exactly a very, very ruthless game. When was politics a beanbag or, it's not about patty cake. It is extremely aggressive and it's all about power. Here's AOC explaining.
Do you think that Justice Breyer should step down after this term?
We have had very difficult experiences with making, I believe, the opposite mistake. And especially if Senate Democrats are not going to pass reforms on H.R. 1, we cannot rely solely on a wish of winning elections, particularly in the Senate, when voting rights are under attack in Georgia, Arizona, and Texas, across the country. And if we're not going to pass H.R. 1 with the preemptive clauses that can roll some of that voter suppression attacks back, I believe that we should protect our Supreme Court. And I thought that should absolutely be a consideration.
So what you're saying is that if we can't do it in the Senate, if we can't do it legislatively, then we'll do it in the courts.
Just to be clear, you do think that
that's not the purpose of the court.
Justice Stephen Breyer should retire at the end of this term.
For their right.
You know, I it's something I think about, but I would probably lean towards yes. But yes, you're asking me this question, so I would give more thought to it. But but I'm inclined to say yes.
See, that's good. But, John, just to clarify, up until, like, the Bork nomination, and even after, a lot of the Supreme Court justices were practically unanimous, 90 to 10 kind of things. I mean, like, there used to be this tradition that whoever was in power in the presidency would get, unless there was something outrageous in the nominee's past, would get mm-hmm. passed. It's become very partisan in the last 30, 40 years, but right. it used to be just a general assent, and that's where things have changed now. And now it's pure power play. I agree.
Well, it's unfortunate because when you read what judges that have had that position for years have said, that our job is not to write law. Do a better job, as Robert said, Scalia said, do a better job writing better legislation and don't make us try to fix your mistakes. That's not what we're here to do. We are here to just tell you whether this is constitutional or not. That's yeah. all. But yeah. not to rewrite. So when you put the word state in there and you capitalize it, as Roberts had to do when it came to Obamacare, then he has to determine, do I save this entire piece of legislation mm-hmm. that's been so sloppily written? The idea also that we always have these litmus tests. So how are you going to rule on abortion, or how are you going to rule on this or that? They didn't have those kind of questions back then because you didn't have the kind of power. You didn't have the sort of sloppy, lazy legislative stuff that is happening now. Yeah, but to the extent that the judges have to be ruling on these, here's the other part of it is Breyer was asked whether or not you should have these things be limited with the lifetime. And he said, yeah, he says 15 or 20 years seems to make sense when they originally came up with this idea that you would mm-hmm. serve for a lifetime. He said, one, you didn't live as long, so you couldn't have somebody right. serving as long. So yeah. maybe that would work out a little better. More yeah. from McConnell talking about...
You mentioned Justice Breyer. I do want to give him a shout out, though, because he joined what Justice Ginsburg said in 2019, that 9 is the right number for the Supreme Court. And I admire him for that. I think even the liberal justices on the Supreme Court have made it clear court packing is a terrible idea.
Yeah, it's Breyer's.
But he would block him if he had a chance.
Yeah.
He's commending him on the one thing where he agrees with him on.
Yeah.
Still, it's an interesting political issue. And right now, the Republicans have taken advantage of the fact that it means more. The Supreme Court nominations or the Supreme Court justices mean more to the right than they do to the left. And that may shift once the right ends up like moving outlawing abortion in some form. That might rejuvenate the left. But right now, because of the abortion issue, the right has always been more, the political invigoration of the Supreme Court has meant more to the right than the left. And yeah. now they have the advantage.
And they have the advantage.
Thanks to Mitch McConnell.
Right, because Mitch McConnell playing by whatever rules have been set in place. But somebody like Chuck Schumer had talked about court packing. So, I mean, they're just as vicious, whether it's right or left. I guess it depends on your friends and who you want to be
yeah,
in control.
In response to, yeah. McConnell,
so the
yeah.
other part of this, it's a razor thin, 50-50 right now in the mm-hmm. Senate, thanks to what the President Trump was able to screw things up and
the
crap
only good
all
thing
over
he
Georgia.
Did in this entire 4 years.
Thank you. But you do have some oldies in there. You got Patrick Leahy, who went away with a heart attack in January. His health, sometimes people say was in question. Bernie Sanders, everybody's favorite millionaire socialist. Also, health not necessarily the best. So you got those two guys in there. They're wow. trying to knock Ron Johnson out. So there are a bunch of moves in play. The Senate could move back to the Republican position, and then you would have yeah. Mitch McConnell in there. He was then asked,
right.
hey, what if you don't have the power? And if you have to have this thing come up sooner rather than later, he goes, well, we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. So,
yeah. They were asking, latest. What if it happens 18 yeah. months, you know, before an election?
Out.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's a great political, you know, situation that's going to be worked out, I guess.
I people try to do the tea leaves reading. So they say, well, mm-hmm. Did the Supreme Court justices put new interns, and if they hired new staff? That's often the case. I think it's every year, every 2 years, they bring a new staff in. And they said, if the person goes ahead and brings new staff in, new
like
interns.
Breyer.
If they did, then there's a pretty good chance they won't be leaving. That's not necessarily the case because others have brought in and then retired. Breyer has hired a whole new group to come in with him. And he, the last time they spoke to him about retiring, he says he has no intention at this point. So,
yeah. You know who also has been talked about? This was actually during the Trump administration, that Clarence Thomas now has been on the court so long that he is obviously biding his time. He is not going to retire or step down while Biden is in power, or the Democrats in the Senate at least. But he might be one of the first to retire to extend the reach of the conservatives on the court if the Republicans take over next go-around.
It is sad because it's out of whack. That's not the way it was supposed to go. That you're not supposed to have big major pieces of legislation, which is the only big pieces of major legislation that Democrats have been able to successfully move through the House or Senate, is all happening in the Supreme Court. The three big ones, Obamacare and abortion, were the big ones, and the third one was gay rights or gay marriage. Those are the three big accomplishments.
A long time ago.
Yes, that was. Think of some of the other big major pieces of legislation that the Democrats have been able to carry. Crickets. They don't. They make it and they have it actually succeed within the court, not through the normal legislative powers of the elected officials making the determination. So you had Democrats succeed with abortion in the Supreme Court, Obamacare, and then also with gay marriage. Those are your three biggies.
Well, yeah, they're three biggies. But I mean, listen, the rights had three biggies too. They got the interpretation of the Second Amendment. You've got Citizens United that says corporations are people. There are big, issues on both sides of the ledger. I do think in the last 30, 40 years, it's a bit like in sports now too. The politics of the court has become so specialized that we're now much more aware. In the past, I think that the judges were put on the Supreme Court as generalists. They weren't particularly this and that. But now we've become so sophisticated in terms of our judicial philosophies. And so, there's so many distinctive camps that you can now pick, okay, this guy agrees more with me, or this woman agrees more with me along judicial philosophies, which decide things. And that wasn't ever the case. But you could argue, well, that's fine because they become more specialized. It's like right now, no pitcher pitches nine innings, or very rarely. You've got somebody who's a closer, somebody who's this or that. That the definition of what makes a judge is much more specific. And now you've got the Federalist Society, who gives a preferred list. These are the people that qualify for our vision of the world that Republicans can identify with. That never used to be the case, and now it's very specialized.
Right. You have the Federalists on one side, and then you have whatever the name of that lawyer association is on the other side that picks the other one. Gets down to, are they originalist? Do they read the Constitution and say, well, this is the Constitution, and these are the words, and this is the intent? Or do we describe it as a living body or a living, breathing document that can change with the times? And then, at that point, all bets are off. So, good. Breyer hangs in there, and we'll see how they continue to rule. They've got a couple of big, big cases that are going to be interesting.
Did you see they just delayed, John, though, the Harvard admissions
test? I saw that.
They haven't not decided. They're just holding off till October, maybe.
Definitely take that one up. All right, Tracy Taylor looking at traffic for us on a big Monday. There you go, Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-7-7-A-K-I-E-L. Kiel Mortgage. By the way, Sean, are they playing that spot where I get to sing the jingle and you help me with it?
No, that's, I don't know when they're going to start putting that spot into rotation, but it's a good one.
We have a few more to
record today.
Thank you, Sean. Sean and I worked hard on that one.
A for effort. You want a trophy?
No. It's like, George Martin and the Beatles. Okay, Phyllis, let's try that one again. Right, Sean? We really worked through that, didn't we?
Yeah, we worked closely together on that spot. It was
mortgage.
Nice. Nah, it's horrible.
Thank you.
See, that's like a behind the scenes of how I treat John when we're off the air. When we're on the air, I'm like, oh, I love that guy.
Whatever. You're the boss. You're the best.
Yep.
All righty. Thank you, Sean. Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. All your mortgage needs right there for you. One man lives in a solitary dream. He's alone on Washington Protection Island. It was an island that they used to fly you out in the early 70s. They'd fly you in a seaplane or a seaplane, and then the pilot would get out, and then the pilot would turn into a salesperson and basically walk you around. Okay, imagine your house would be here. You'd have this view and this and that and this. It was going to be this island that they would then develop. And then I guess that conservationists stepped in and said, nope, we don't want anybody to do this. They were able to stop it. But people had already purchased some of the land. So then there was a compromise that went into play where you could sell the land. You could have it for a little while, and they would basically take it back. This one guy who bought the land for, what, $7,000 or something like that?
Yeah, $7,000 in 1971.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. He said, no, I don't really want to give it up. He wants to keep it, but he was going to respect the island. He would be the last person to own land on that island.
Yeah, they were the people that had already. So there was a battle. They wanted to set up this a beach community. They were going to put in an airstrip, a marina, and all of that. And so a handful of people bought property as it was being argued in court whether this should be remain like a wilderness protection refuge spot. And the environmentalists ended up winning. And so their solution to the problem with the people that already bought the property was, we'll give you deals. We'll let anybody who's already bought property, you can stay there for 15 years, 25 years, or a lifetime. This guy was the only guy to sign the lifetime guarantee. Mm-hmm. He was 23 at the time that he signed it. He's now 72. So he's been there for like 50 years, and he's the only guy left on the island. Fantastic profile in the New York Times about this individual. And John, I have to admit that when I was reading this, I thought we could have changed that headline. One man lives a solitary dream as lone human in Washington's clum. This guy reminds me of you a lot in that you've moved out of society and into what you saw as a chance to commune with nature. It's not quite as extreme as Protection Island, but still, whatever impulse that this guy has, I think is similar to the impulse you had to get out of the big city and into a more rustic way of life. He lives in a cabin that he's been upgrading for 50 years that still has no electricity, and he has no plans to put electricity in.
Yeah,
a little rougher than you have it.
Oh, my God. He does have support. People bring stuff in. He has a boat or something, so he does.
Yes.
He gets supplies delivered to him, but he's all by himself. Nope. And friends come and visit, according to the New York Times. They do visit enough that he does then appreciate his alone time.
Yes, I know, which I thought
much
of you.
For the type of people that are coming to see him.
But yes, he does. And it's not like he's a recluse. He's not like that hermit guy who lived in the woods hiding and stealing from other people's cabins for, 50 years and then finally got found out. He's still like when he has a hankering for society, he just takes a boat in and drives into Port Townsend. So he's not like a social recluse. It's just that he has had access to the kind of natural habitat that none of us can have because it's just because of this one particular quirk in his contract. And so he's been able to watch the entire island kind of evolve. To me, one of the ironies of this is that when you're that close to nature, and environmentalists want to do, they want to preserve nature. He does too. So he's in alignment with the environmentalists, but he points out the fact that eagles are making, a mockery of what that island used to be. The eagles at one point were an endangered species. Now they're flourishing, but because there are no fish left for them to feed on, they now feed on seabirds. And he says it's wiping out the eagle population is wiping out the seabird population. He says there's an imbalance in nature here, and he's actually advocating for government intervention to kind of correct the natural balance. The irony is we're asking government to do something to correct a balance in nature, which is the whole point of him going there to preserve nature.
Yes. I can't imagine. I mean, I don't have a whole lot, but I do have electricity.
I'm talking
to you now on the radio. And I do have people down the street, by the way. I have less of Dougie. He has lost 10 pounds in the last 2 weeks because his doctor told him, I cannot operate on your knee unless you lose 26 pounds. So I have been working with him on a diet. I went out and I bought about $180 worth of meat at Safeway and gave it to him. And he's been able to lose 10 pounds in 10 days or 12 days. And he's on his way, hopefully. Yes.
Write a book called The Clum Diet.
Is it old? But it's exclusively meat for some
reason? Just meat. I give nothing but meat.
Wow.
And he hasn't had a beer.
Neanderthal.
He hasn't had a beer, which is really amazing.
Wow.
In 3 weeks since he started this thing. And he's really into White Claws, which is like this seltzer that women drink. And he's started a book club. It's like I hardly recognize him now. No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
And tomorrow he gets a haircut, which he hadn't gotten a haircut for an entire year ever since COVID hit. So he's seen the transformation of this guy. I do have to say that living out here, it is kind of weird. I've noticed because I take Lou to Mule and Elk, which is a bar, a brew pub. Everybody brings their dogs in there. Nobody seems to care. And I've noticed that everybody's dog seems to love their owner more than Lou loves me. This is a sort of a really rural thing. And this one guy goes, yeah, you just got to let your dog lick your face more. And I, but yeah, just let your dog, hold on, come here, Skipper. Skipper, come here, Skipper. Hey, hey, hey. And the dog comes running. And he licks all over the guy's face. He goes, hey, there you go, Skipper, that's enough. He goes, let Lou do that. Just let your dog lick your face a lot more, and you're going to have a lighter.
You said tighter. To him, this is a $6 million face, buddy. I'm not going to let my dog lick all over it.
And I have now, I get up in the morning, go ahead, lick my face.
She could also be jealous with how much meat you gave to Dougie, John. I feel like that might have something to do with it.
Don't try to complicate things, Jacob. Just, I gotta let the Lou's gotta lick my face more. That's all. We got a kind of a we're working it out, so we're figuring out like how often, like twice a day. I gotta find out, but yeah, it's a big deal.
By the way, Protection Island's in the Strait of Juan de Fuca. If we failed to acknowledge
that's very
that at the beginning.
Rainy there, very very rainy. I could never take that, man. That would be hard.
Yeah.
Look at Lou.
Wood-burning
what time
slow.
Is it? It's 4.
Is it time to eat?
Yeah, so you're gonna lick my face. All right, let's check traffic. All righty, here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Do love to hear from you. You text us in the State Roofing text line, 98973. All right, problems on board airplanes. Was this the Delta flight that they made the call for a particular type of people to rush forward?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
from
here we go.
LA to Atlanta, and they ended up in Oklahoma City.
Oh, that's not quite Atlanta.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the captain speaking. We'd like all strong males to the front of the aircraft to handle.
Oh, all strong males at the front of the aircraft.
A Delta direct tonight from LAX to Atlanta suddenly disrupted by a passenger. Though none of the doors open while in flight, it doesn't stop this man from trying, and so many from trying to stop him.
Next thing I knew, there were people rushing up to the front, and he started shoving people, and it was this outrageous fight.
LA's Brandon Nazarian talked to us from Oklahoma City, where the plane was diverted.
He was fighting them back extremely hard. His feet were flying in the air. The flight attendant was, it looked like he got a concussion.
All right. Apparently, this is happening more and more often. But, Tom, you and I like the fact that the captain had called for a strong male
yes.
to come to the front.
Well, yeah, there are all sorts of... Now, again, it's a serious situation, and luckily nothing bad happened. They subdued this guy. They got him off the plane. He's under arrest and all of that. But, yes, we're envisioning a number of scenarios. First off, just as a kind of minor one, I thought it was interesting that he stopped. He says, I want all strong males to come. I know some women that could kick the crap out of a lot of guys. The fact that he designated a pretty specific gender, I thought, seemed old-fashioned to me. It's like calling them stewardesses these days or something. But still,
men are physically stronger than women on average.
On average, yeah. Yes. But again, like I have neighbors. One's a firefighter and all this. I mean, anyway, the fact that he made that distinction is something.
Says more about the type of men and women you hang around with. But go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, professional women who are tough and competent. I mean, come on, John. But anyway, the point is, what's funny about this is that also we imagined a scenario in our pre-show of somebody standing up. Well, strong male. Am I strong? And then you stand up, and then if you're say Jacob's size or even your size, John, might be tower. Someone might get up, and he's 6'4" and 250 and all muscle, and you realize, oh, maybe they're not calling on me to do it, and you defer to the bigger, stronger men, if you want.
Right, as you stand up, you start to look around. Then you look at another
scrawny
guy. You should be up, not me. Yeah, and then those guys get up. But if you start to look around, think. Geez, I'm as strong as that guy. Right? It is, and it probably happens within seconds you make the determination.
Yeah.
So I went to see, did you know that they had people that don't know anything about MMA fighting or any type of boxing and stuff? They showed more than 3,000 people pictures of men who would win in a fight. And did you know that the majority of people knowing nothing about MMA or anything having to do with that type of wrestling, fighting, jiu-jitsu, most of them, within 94%, were able to choose the winners just looking at the human face, because there
face,
are
not body,
face, not body, wow. Okay. Just from the neck up. And it wasn't that they had all these scars and broken noses and stuff, but they what they look at is size of the forehead, size of the different the space between the bottom of the nose and the bottom of the upper lip. There's a greater space there. The eyes are more separated and tend to be a little more narrow. And they said there are like seven characteristics of a face of a person that is probably physically stronger and a better fighter than someone else. And when your brain picks up on it, like in tenths of a thousandth of a second. Also, a larger forehead that's more forward. They said the people just said that guy is stronger than that guy, or that guy could beat that guy in a fight. Most of them almost got 100% correct, because there's just something about a human face that tells you that person is stronger than that person.
But you would be misleading, because you do work out, but you also have a pretty boy face.
Oh,
so
I would get my ass kicked. But if it just came to like push-ups and pull-ups and all that kind of stuff, I'd challenge anybody. But I mean, just as far as like a face that's very punchable. So
So, folks, we need people with the most punchable face to please make their way up to the front of the cockpit.
I'd be like, I guess me. Yeah. Of course, I would already be up there because I'm sitting 1A.
I was going to say, does that mean when he called for the strong men, did you have to get up and leave you and go back to the back of the plane?
Exactly. All right. For those of you,
who would like to warm up on somebody first before coming up here, you can punch the guy in 1A.
1A.
Oh, my God. What a crazy, crazy story. All right. A little bit like what happens to the roadway, unfortunately, sometimes. Tracy Tiller, what's going on Monday for us?